Alex, my brother in Christ, I just got off of a rant on our group chat about our hapless Detroit Red Wings right now. And this got me thinking, because the state of Michigan sports, like outside of like the national champion, we'll go professional because, you know, thank the Lord we have the Michigan Wolverines to root for. But like over the past decade, there has not been a city in a sports city in America that has been worse than Detroit, Michigan. The Tigers have been atrocious. The Pistons just broke a record. Not just, but I don't know if you know this. They had the most consecutive losses in NBA history. I don't know if you know that happened this year, like in like December, and it was wild. And then
it was like 27 games, I think. 26.
It was 28, I think. It almost got to 30 or something. I don't even know. You just lose count by how many straight losses that was. And then the Red Wings for a long time were the like professional organization in sports, not just hockey. And they've been miserable to watch over the past 7 years as well. Alex, I need to ask you a question. What one singular sports moment has wanted you to gouge your eyes off, jump off of a bridge, beat your forehead against a brick wall? Because I used to not be with the Red Wings, but I'm getting so, so close with them right now. You go first.
If I've got to pick a singular moment, I've got a few floating around in my head. I've actually got three very specific thoughts
in my head right now. I want to hear them.
Oh, okay. One of them's going to be a little off the wall. The first two are going to be obvious. So the first one is the JT was short call in the Michigan-Ohio State game. Just the fact that Michigan played that game, and for the first time in forever, I was watching and I was like, I think they deserve to win this football game. Like, they didn't play perfect, but I felt like they deserved to win that football game finally against Ohio State. And it was the one time where I've ever felt like, you know what, if that game was played at home, I feel like the other team wins. Like, I think Michigan wins that game if it's played at the Big House. I think they overturned that call. So JT is short is number one. Second one is trouble with the snap. Like, again, same situation. Michigan played well enough to deserve to win that football game against Michigan State. And then I'll never forget Blake O'Neal, the Australian punter, former model, who my now wife, girlfriend at the time, was like, oh, he's fairly attractive. I was like, okay, he dropped the ball. That's all I care about. He dropped the ball. That was numbing, that pain. It was numbing. Third one, it's the most upset I've ever been, I think, at a hockey result outside of the Wings losing the cup final in 2009 when Sidney Crosby scored the overtime goal for Canada against the U.S.
Wow, that's a deep cut. I mean, like,
that's a deep cut.
People are mad about that still, but like, that's like, that's national. That's national pain right there. Oh,
it was national pain. I remember vividly, I was in the car with my mom. My mom was driving and I was in the passenger seat and we were listening to it on the radio. And when I heard the announcer say what had happened and announce Crosby's goal, I was furious and I took my fists and I pounded the dashboard of the car. And my mom like flipped out on me and was like, you need to calm down. And I was so upset. And of course it was Crosby, right? Mm-hmm. Who did it? So those are my three sports moments that just make me furious.
I would have to agree with the Michigan ones, but for Michigan, they just made me sad. It wasn't angry. Like, the JT was short. Like, I was just like, I think there was a moment for me. I was like, I'm never going to see this football team beat Ohio State ever again. Like, nothing will ever go in the favor of the team that I root for, especially there. It's open dialogue. Every Ohio State fan is going to say he got the first down. Every Michigan fan is going to say he was short. Like, so we're
Every Michigan fan is going to say the picture Ohio State fans tweet out is photoshopped.
Right, exactly. So, like, that's okay, moot point. I was at Trouble with the Snap. I've made that known a lot. And I don't think I've ever been more, like, deflated. First off, I was shocked. And second off, like, I was like, I'd never experienced a victory that was like that, like, was locked in, ready to go, and then have it stripped away like that. It was, oh my gosh. I'm looking from this perspective of, like, I want to go hurt somebody and hurt them bad. 2013 ALCS, the bullpen cop, like, Boston Red Sox, Big Poppy, like, go ahead grand slam the eighth. That makes me mad because that was game two of the series. Everyone's like, oh, Boston goes on. Like, Boston won the series with that. It was game two. Detroit won game one. They stole a game from the Red Sox, and they went home with the advantage in the series. And then they just folded. And it's like, everyone talks about bullpen cop. Oh, bullpen cop was backbreaking. It's like, that was game two. That was game two of the series. You don't just...
So your irritation is with the fallout from Boston fans.
Oh, my God. No, I'm just like... I'm mad at the team just because it's like, oh, we blew that game the whole series. It was game two. You went home. You had home field advantage. You did what you needed to do. Go out and win the series. And they didn't do it. A lot of these memories can be stemmed from the Tigers. That's definitely up there. And a lot of, I'm a very emotional sports fan. So, like, I just get really sad. There's a lot of moments where Tigers lost postseason games and I cried. I will not disclose that information, whether I was 9 or 19. But it's whatever. Number two, I think, and we were just talking about this before we got on the show, the 2013 Western Conference semifinals against the Blackhawks. It was the Detroit blew a 3-1 lead before it was cool when the Golden State Warriors did it, or the Cleveland, you know, at the time the Cleveland Indians did it. They had the Blackhawks on the ropes, and I am convinced that the Red Wings go on and win one more cup with Nick Lidstrom after that. And they collapsed on themselves. And then you could.
And it had to be the Blackhawks.
It had to be the Blackhawks. And so frustrating. And then my final, and this is a cop out because I don't want to waste all of our time with this. Any Lions moment ever. We'll just go with that.
That's a fantastic point. I think the one I remember the most was Calvin Johnson's touchdown in Cleveland that they said he dropped the ball.
Oh, but it's not just ref calls. I think the one that blows my mind, it was a Thursday night game against the Packers at Ford Field, and Aaron Rodgers threw that Hail Mary to win the game. You go back and watch the film of that game. They had two defensive ends. Like, you know how you, like, rush three or whatever? It wasn't defensive. It was corners. But they had two cornerbacks defending the sidelines. The sideline. Not the end zone. Not the end. The side. Why? Aaron Rodgers is going to scramble 60 yards for a touchdown? No. That's not happening. But yet, the Lions were the Lions, and then only the Lions can give up a Hail Mary like that to lose the... Oh, my gosh. It's just I hate that I love sports so much because it's taken years off my life, hairs off the top of my head. But I guess Michigan won a national championship, so I got to sit in that.
Well, now that we're all depressed, if you love Big Ten football, you came to the right place. Welcome to Big Banter, everyone. If you're new here, make sure you like and follow us wherever you're listening. Follow us on the socials. We're on Instagram and Threads at B1G Banter, and then we're on X at B1G Banter Pod. Corey, say something to cheer everyone up now that we've lulled them into a deep sadness.
Audience members, everyone listening, whether you're a longtime listener or you just picked up this random podcast on your Spotify Discover this week, I want you to know that Big Banter, some teams, Detroit, Philly, Pittsburgh, maybe out in California, some teams, they'll let you down. This team right here will never let you down, ever. B because we have great fans like you guys. You're incredible. We love you guys. Thanks for listening to us just spew whatever we want to talk about throughout the week. And hope you like what we got going on.
So tonight we've got college football playoff expansion talk. We'll spend a little bit of time on that because technically there's no official format, but rumor has it, we know what it's going to be. So we're going to talk CFP format. We're going to talk Caden Proctor and the crazy game of musical chairs he's been playing with himself and Iowa and Alabama. And then we are going to end the episode with our official Big Banter Big Ten head coach rankings. That's right. Corey and I have to come to a consensus. We have not talked about this before the show. This is going to be a live discussion on how we rank the Big Ten football coaches. So let's start off college football playoff stuff. They have agreed with ESPN on a new extended contract past 2026. So essentially all that tells us is that the CFP will be on ESPN and it will be a thing going forward. They released zero details on an agreed upon format because there is not a current agreed upon format. But the format that is being proposed is a 14-team playoff where the SEC and Big Ten each get three auto bids, ACC and Big 12 each get two auto bids, then you have the best group of five team and three at-large spots. Like I said, the details are not ironed out on this, but I think it's a safe assumption to say a 14-team playoff in some capacity is coming. My initial reaction to this, Corey, I came around on the 12-team playoff. I wanted it to be six or eight. I thought that was a more appropriate number of teams. 12, they lured me into 12 because, you know, you get home playoff games and the top four still get byes so that conference championships games matter. So they lured me into 12. 14 is a harder pill to swallow. Part of it is because how many years does the 14th best team in college football actually have a chance to win the national championship, right? Like, that's my first point. I went back today and I looked at the last 3 years of final end of year college football rankings. In 2020, so last year, the 14th through 12th teams, I'll go 14, 13, or 12. 14 was Notre Dame, 13 was Penn State, 12 was LSU, all with a 10-3 record. The year before that, we had Kansas State at 14. That was when they won the Big 12 and they upset TCU. Clemson at 11-3 and USC at 11-3. The year before that, we had Clemson at 14 at 10-3. Then we had the Kenny Pickett Pittsburgh team at 13 who won the ACC. And then we had Utah at 12. I don't remember watching any of those teams in any of those years and thinking, yeah, they deserve a postseason berth, like a college football playoff berth. And part of that was because we were only doing four teams, right? So no one even considered that. But I don't know that I would have enjoyed watching those teams going up against Alabama or Georgia or Texas or Michigan or Ohio State. Like, I feel like we've already had a ton of blowouts in the CFP, and I feel like this might just make it worse.
You know, the whole worry about expanding the college football playoff and any of these NCAA playoffs is diluting the product. There's been talks of expanding, which is probably in agreement, the best tournament format that mankind knows, and that's the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournament. And they're trying to tinker with that, maybe add a few more teams. But I think the general consensus is everybody loves watching the NCAA tournament. So I think what's going on here is that college football is trying to capture the magic of the NCAA tournament and put it on a football-like scale. But I think the issue is, number one, you can't put it at a football scale because of the nature of the game. And number two, like, the sports are so unique to one another. And the best way that I can explain it is this. The NCAA tournament is a nationwide, like, you know, experience. You've got 68 different teams from 68 different parts of the country, and you're playing in, you know, multiple venues across the continental United States. Okay. What the college football playoff has come up with the 12 and then the 14 team playoff is that they have a mixture of what they do in the lower levels of division, you know, division level football, division three, division two, division one B or whatever it's called, where every game is played at the home team or the highest ranked team's, you know, home stadium. But now you're mixing in like the bowl, like you're mixing in the bowl games and then the neutral sites, like in morphing those together. The NCAA tournament works because you can go travel to see your favorite team. But college football won't work. You can still get that, but there's such an advantage of playing a home playoff game, especially if you're in Alabama, a Michigan, a Notre Dame, all this other stuff. And it just, like, I think I did a really horrible job of explaining that, but like, you watch that, it just doesn't work. It's not feasible. You can't make the money work. And then if you're trying to get the best of both worlds, you can't really do that either because you don't have an identity with it. The cool thing about the NCAA tournament, it's on site. It's, you know, it's at a, you know, I can't even think of the word because my brain is mashed potatoes. But like, you know, it's destination appeal to see your favorite team. And the Final Four is a destination itself. You get that with the national championship kind of, but like with some of the bowl games, like the Rose Bowl is the destination place to go. I wouldn't necessarily say like the Sugar Bowl has the same appeal. I mean, maybe the Cotton Bowl of old. And then like everybody kind of forgot that the national championship was in Washington, right? Or it was in Houston, I mean. So like, but people remember, oh, the Final Four was in Indianapolis. The Final Four was in, you know, Tempe, Arizona. The Final Four was blah, 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 blah. You're trying to replicate something at the Division I college football level that you have with Division I men's and women's basketball, but you can't do it because the sports are different and the venues, it won't work because there's not an identity there.
You're right. It won't work. Like for an NCAA tournament, for a March Madness tournament, first round, like you can go and watch, what is it, 8 games of basketball in one location over 2 days? Like, and that's a very feasible thing for a fan to do if their team makes it. You're not doing that with football. You're getting one game, one weekend, 2 teams, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it. And you can't have multiple games in a week. Like you as a fan have to go to one place, you watch your one game, and that's it. For basketball, because it's basketball, like it works because it's a different sport. We're trying to explain like, hey, this is a different sport. Okay, why is it a different sport? It's just a different sport. Like, and that's why it can't work. Like,
well, here's why it's a different sport. Because the other side of this is like the March Madness being as wide open as it is with 68 teams technically making it. Like 16 seeds can beat ones. Doesn't happen often. Only has happened twice, but it can happen. 15 seeds beat twos fairly frequently, and then everything below that is like crapshoot. Like everyone has to be on edge. If I go back to these rankings I just pulled up. If they tried to do something that was a similar format last year, or not last year, 3 years ago, Kansas State is not beating Georgia. The Clemson team that lost to Pitt in the ACC championship is not beating Georgia. Notre Dame is not beating Michigan. Like, though, football is not like that. You can have a March Madness game where Jack Golke from Oakland University 3 balls in your eyes 10 times in a game, and he just takes over, and he beats a Kentucky. That does not happen in football. Like, Jaden Daniels and LSU last year, as electric as that offense is, they are not beating Texas because Texas would put up freaking 140 points on their defense. So football's, you're right, it's a fundamentally different sport. You can't have one or two guys just play the game of their lives and pull off the biggest upset in the world, right? I feel like it's been a while since we've seen that in college football anyways. Like, I think of App State over Michigan back in the day. When was the last time we had something similar to that? Like Auburn lost last year to, I can't remember who the team was, but Auburn stunk last year. Like, you don't see the elite college football teams year in and year out losing multiple games that they shouldn't. So I don't feel, I say all that to say, I don't feel like expanding 12 to 14 helps you get to a more accurate representation of who the best team at college football is. And if that's not one of the things expanding to 14 is accomplishing, then I don't know what the point of expanding to 14 is. Actually, secretly, I do. It's ad money. And that's well, the bill of goods we're being sold.
It's always been about the money. It's always been about the money. And here, sitting here, and as we're talking about this, like, oh, the sports are different because they're different. Basketball can happen because it is a team sport, but it's a very individualized team sport. A guy like Jack Golke, if he goes off, the rest of the team could suck. But if Jack Golke goes off, you still have a chance to win, right? With football, it gets more, your stars get more diluted. And you can see that with hockey too, because you have four lines of forwards like Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Connor Bedard. These are some of the best players that we have in the game right now. There are zero Stanley Cup championships between those guys because the rest of their team hasn't been able to produce at their level, or at least complement them in a way that can put them into championship caliber teams and then you know, championship games. For football, like, it truly does take all, you know, 11 on defense, 11 on offense to make a difference. Like, you know, how many, when was the last time, and it's, I know it's recent, but how many Heisman Trophy winners in that season were also national champions? The numbers.
It's the curse of the Heisman.
Well, it's the curse of the Heisman, but I feel like if you asked a, maybe even like a somewhat avid fan, if you told them that number, it would shock them that it would be lower than expected, is what I'm saying. So, like, your stars are still going to be stars. They're going to put up big individual stats, but is that necessarily going to replicate to, you know, a championship level? Or is that going to replicate in the national championship? Odds are it's probably not. So if you're thinking, well, we've had so much success with the college basketball tournament, and we'll just add more teams, then that will bring the excitement. Well, no, because the games are fundamentally different. So I will say I would disagree a little bit with some of those like fringe, like 11, 12, and 13 teams. That USC team that you mentioned, that was Caleb Williams' Heisman year, correct? Where they finished outside of the top 10. They lost to Tulane in the Cotton Bowl, but USC had a defense problem, but they also had a Utah problem. And they played Utah twice, and unfortunately, because they played Utah twice, they didn't get a chance to be in the national championship like conversation. I would argue that USC team would give any of those teams in the college football playoff a run for their money, just because of how talented not only Caleb Williams was, but how talented that offense was. So
potentially, yeah. Yeah, and I think the good part, I think the thing that will be good about the expanded playoff is home field playoff games are going to be absolutely electric. It is going to be a sight to behold to have a postseason game hosted actually at a campus. There are other things that I worry about, value of conference championships. Like, if you have three auto bids coming out of the Big Ten and SEC, wouldn't you love to be the third best team and not have to play an extra game and get an extra week of prep and rest and all that stuff? And I think we talked about that on a past episode, so I don't want to belabor the point, but I think we say all this to say this is kind of a wait and see for if this is actually good for the sport. We know it's going to be good for ad revenue, just not positive if it's going to be good for college football as a whole going forward.
I agree. And I think they're going to be in trouble because people are going to love the home playoff games, but you're still going to have these contracts with all these bowl places, the Rose Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, all these big brands that you've helped create and cultivate over the course of college football history. And people are going to be like, well, this is stupid. Why are we playing at a neutral site in the most important games? And it's like, well, we kind of have to because of money reasons. The reason that people like the lower level and people were clamoring for like, oh, we should just do Division I like as Division III does. It's like, okay, well, that's through the gauntlet of home playoff games for the highest seeds. So And you can't do that. You can't do that at the highest level of college football because of what has already been in place.
Exactly. Yep. So speaking of the good of the future of college football and what is good and what is not, let's talk about this Caden Proctor situation. So, timeline. Caden Proctor was, I believe, the top offensive tackle in his class back in 2022. And he originally committed to Iowa, then late flipped to Bama and ended up signing with Bama. He played last year, the whole season, with Bama. And then afterwards, he entered the transfer portal on January 17th and committed to Iowa. So he committed to Iowa as a recruit, then decommitted, committed to Bama. Then after the season, entered the transfer portal, committed back to Iowa. Now, only a couple months after he entered the portal on January 17th, it is now being reported that he plans to re-enter the portal in the spring and go back to Alabama. So, commit to Iowa in 22, decommit from Iowa in 22, commit to Bama in 22, play for Bama in the 23-24 season, decommit from Bama and enter the portal in January, commit to Iowa in January, then enter the portal again and leave Iowa after the spring and go back to Bama. This doesn't seem right.
No, it's not right at all. I mean, what are we doing? We talked about how there is NIL is the wild, wild west. There is no sort of discipline. You can't even track this stuff. And you can't track it, you don't know how to define it, and you don't know what to do with it. But yet it is dominating the transfer portal and why these kids are going in the portal. I just had this thought. So in the early stages, you, me, and Ethan were talking about like, well, what's to stop somebody from going to the portal, taking their money, and then going someplace else and getting more money after that? And we're all kind of like, we don't know. It just happened. It just happened with this Caden Proctor situation. I don't care how you cut it. I'm sure there was some sort of exchange. He got some sort of financial, reward in his NIL. And then he's like, you know what? I saw Cade McNamara throw a couple passes. I'm out of here.
Cade McNamara is catching straight from Corey.
I'm a Cade McNamara fan, but many, many people aren't. Besides the point, like the worst case scenario, which every old head and every like college football fan over the age of 63 is like, NIL is going to ruin the game. It just happened. Okay. So this is why. There has to be, whether it's a contract for your NIL earnings or an agreement, a contract needs to be in place between schools, NILs, and these players if we're going to be exchanging this amount of money, because there's nothing to stop somebody from doing exactly this. He hadn't even played a single down. We don't even know if he went to practice.
They didn't start spring practice. They have not started spring practice yet. I don't know if lifting is happening right now, but he has not participated in a spring practice with the University of Iowa and is already deciding, I'm going back to Bama.
Yeah.
I'm going back to Bama.
He wanted to go.
And you know what? Caden Proctor, do whatever you want, right? Like, I don't want to bash him. Like, the rules are the rules. This is how this works right now because of the NCAA sitting on their hands with their thumbs up their rears doing nothing. Like, this is what happens. I was listening to Josh Pate today, his Late Kick podcast, and he was talking about how he couldn't name names or name coaches or programs, but he was talking to people who said, recently, not only do they know which kids on their team are going to leave for the transfer portal after spring practice, they already know who's going to come in and fill those spots in the portal too. Like, it is literally the way it's working right now. it might as well be 365 days a year, 24/7 free agency in college football. Like, tampering is not getting cracked down on. You've got two transfer portal windows after the season and then after spring practice. Like, it is literally chaos. It is a circus. And coaches have no idea who's going to be on their team in a couple of weeks. It's insanity. It's not sustainable. It takes away from the spirit of what I feel like we grew up watching with college football, right? Like watching a Tim Tebow. Like, Tim Tebow's a Florida Gator. He will always be a Florida Gator. Colt McCoy will always be a Texas Longhorn. I know there's other guys I'm missing off the top. Like, Chad Henne will always be a Michigan Wolverine. Terrell Pryor will always be an Ohio State Buckeye. Trace McSorley will always be a Penn State Nittany Lion. I mean, it's just, what happened to those stories? And the transfer portal is not all bad. NIL is not all bad. That's not what we're saying. But when it is just open circus for these guys, it's not good for the sport. It's not sustainable. And do not give me this crap about, like, well, coaches move whenever they want to. When was the last time a coach did what Caden Proctor just did? Again, not bashing Caden Proctor. The rules are set up for this to happen and for him to go to the highest bidder. He's got to do whatever's best for him. But when was the last time a coach went, I'm leaving. Wait, I'm coming back. No, wait, I'm leaving again. I think the only Bill thing O'Brien? I can think of is Josh. When did Bill O'Brien do that?
Bill O'Brien took the offensive coordinator position, then took a head coach position.
It was an elevation in.
Okay.
It was a promotion. It was a job promotion.
Yeah. That's fair.
The only thing I can think of that was relatively close to this
Manny
is
Diaz?
Like Josh McDaniels. I was thinking Josh McDaniels, like saying he was going to take the Indianapolis Colts head coaching job. You remember that? Yeah. And then he was like, actually, no, I'm not going to take that job.
Oh, dude, it's just crazy. The thing that we talked about a couple weeks ago was like this, and we're talking about it now. I at least hinted like, the power kind of needs to go back into like the coaching and the administration's hands with this, because again, these are players. You're now getting compensated for your stuff, which is a good thing. We're all in agreement of that. But like this demanding of, hey, I want $100,000 or I'm getting out of here. Like, and I can get out of here at the end of every season or sometimes even in the middle of the season. Like that just can't work, especially when it doesn't happen at the professional level. Ant Wright was talking about, and this was just like through the Twitterverse, of coaches.
X-verse.
Yeah, I don't care. Of coaches and hearing stories of coaches like, hey, we're going to give you this NIL money if you come and transfer here. And the kid's like, okay, but he transfers. He's like, oh, actually, we don't have the NIL money. Like, sorry about it. So, like, number one, that's just like kind of stupid on the kid's part. So, like, don't want to blame the kid for that. But number two, I think this is how the coaches are going to like get around this until somebody's like actually set some ground rules. It's like, hey, we're going to offer you 1.6 milli to come to Miami. And the kid's like, okay, shoot, I'm coming. And he goes, is like, actually, we have like $4 for you. And it's the fall. So you can transfer.
I mean, look at what Florida did to that quarterback recruit. I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head, but they promised him like it was some ridiculous number in NIL money. I want to say like 13 mil. And then he signed his NLI and they were like, they did exactly what you said. They were like, oh, we don't have it. And he got released and he ended up going to Arizona State. So, and I'm not saying coaches are blameless in this either.
No,
like if that stuff is, yeah, if that stuff is going on, if I'm a kid, I would change my mind. I'd be like, wait, I'm not staying here then. Like you're not keeping your end of the bargain here. So if that stuff is going on and happened in the Caden Proctor situation, by all means, go back to Bama. But the entire ecosystem, the way it's operating right now, you just can't. I guess I hesitate to say it's not sustainable because am I going to stop watching college football? No, but it's just not healthy. I don't know. I just can't put it any other way than it's not healthy for the sport. And I don't think it creates good habits in young men who are 18 to 22 years old either.
It isn't sustainable, but we're not really going to care until something actually like happens that truly affects it. Because we were in talks like that, oh, NIL is going to ruin stuff. Past 3 years of college football have been an electric factory, not just because of the Michigan, you know, component for us, you know, individually, but because like they've like we've had great, great college football playoff games. We've had drama with USC getting into the Pac-12 and then losing their game and then Ohio State backing into the playoff. You know, we've had TCU Michigan, which, yes, frustrating for Michigan fans, but one of the best college football games of the college football playoff era, right? And then you just had the Rose Bowl between two longtime powerhouse blue blood football programs and maybe one of the greatest college football playoff games that's ever been played as well. So the games have still been great. The conference championships have still been great and have given, you know, teams reasons to play for. Like, Bowl season has been diluted over the past couple of years with opt-outs and then, you know, pointing towards, oh, we're not in the college football playoff. Like, yeah, that's going to happen. But the two things that have remained have been the conference championships are still highly sought after and players want to play for them. And then, of course, as always, the, you know, to play for a national championship. As soon as one of those things goes, which we're kind of in agreement that it's going to be conference championships, because if you get auto bids, what's the point of playing for them? You know, you get a ring for your conference. Like, yeah, that's cool, but that's not a national championship ring. As soon as one of those goes and players start opting out for those things, then we're in trouble. And the whole landscape of college football is going to change.
Totally agree. Could not agree more. I think that's a good place to end it. So let's get into our big banter, Big Ten football head coach consensus ranking list. That is the official title. I will remember it, and it will be on the socials. So, okay, let's figure this out first. Criteria for how we're ranking these guys. My thought was just, like, because you could rank them based on, like, career achievements, right? And maybe it plays some sort of factor. But I feel like the generic question has to be, would you hire him right now? What do you think? Like, hire ability right now to lead your football team. And that kind of be the baseline that we go with.
No, power rankings are who's the best right now. Like, that's always what power rankings have been. Right?
Yeah. So hire ability right now or who you would want to lead your team right now. I agree.
Correct. I wish we had a big board.
Okay.
This is everyone's talking about the NFL draft. This is our NFL draft. This is Big Banter's NFL draft. Which football coach is the best? Who's number one on our big board?
I have a notepad. I have a notepad. This is our big board. This is our big board notepad.
Who's Todd?
Our Big Banter big board notepad.
Who's Todd McShay and who's Mel Kiper?
Dot 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 dot
dot dot dot dot.
I feel like we both have a Todd McShay look about us. Neither of us has the capability to pull off the hair that Mel Kiper has.
Ugh, jealous.
What a head of lettuce that guy has. Okay. Let's start. I think we should start at the bottom.
Yes. Well, let's go with the full ranking first. Like,
what do you mean?
Like, because are we going off of the ranking of the Big Ten Network, and then we're going to make our ranking, or we're just going to, because we should go in alphabetical order if we're not, because
of
like,
coach
of the coaches. Yes.
Okay. Well, let's not go in alphabetical order because I would have to, I'd have to sing the ABCs a lot as I'm listing off coaches here. Okay. You know what? No, maybe I can do this.
Can you do conference or
no,
can you
I
do?
I can't do this.
Okay. Never mind. Cause divisions don't exist anymore. Thank the Lord.
It's divisionless football now.
Praise
it's divisionless you. Football. Okay. So let me just read off the names. All right. I'll read off the names. We've got, this is including the newbies. We've got Lincoln Riley, Dan Lanning. Who else is new? Deshaun Foster for UCLA, their new head coach. And then Jed Fish for Washington. Those are the four newbies. Then we've got Sharon Moore, who's also a newbie, I guess. Ryan Day, James Franklin, Kirk Ferentz, Luke Fickell, Matt Rhule, Jonathan Smith, who's also a newbie, Oregon State to Michigan State, Brett Bielema, Kirk Cignetti, the new guy from JMU who's at Indiana, PJ Fleck, Mike Loxley, Greg Schiano, David Braun, who's not exactly new. He's Northwestern's former interim coach, now head man, and then Ryan Walters at Purdue. So that is the list. I say we start at the bottom, and
this might be our easiest one.
I think it will be our easiest one, but I want to get this out of the way first. Are we ranking the guys who have not been head coaches before?
Yes.
You want to rank them? Okay.
Yes, we should. I mean, it's the head coach power rankings. We have to.
Okay. All right. That's fine. On the count of three, say who your bottom ranked head coach is.
I can't remember his name, but I know the school.
One, two, three.
UCLA. PJ Fleck. Oh.
Oh.
It can't.
I thought that was good.
It can't be PJ Fleck. PJ Fleck would be 15. He's not lat. What's his name again from UCLA?
Deshaun Foster.
Deshaun Foster. I got nothing against the guy other than the fact that he was a running backs coach last year, and now you're asking him to control the whole football. That is the story when he got hired. He brought in from Eric Bieniemy from the Commanders, which is great. Like that's what inexperienced coaches should do. They should bring more experienced coaches to kind of like help them through or like give them, you know, advice or, you know, whatever. Like that's what Juwan Howard did with Phil Martelli. It worked out for the beginning. That's smart. But as far as Foster, he's never coached. He's never head coached anywhere ever. How on earth he could be above anybody on this list is it's impossible. He can't be.
Well, there are other coaches on the list who have never been a head coach ever. I mean, Sharon Moore has technically never been a head coach ever outside of a few games.
Technically.
But I get your point in that Deshaun has also never been a coordinator ever.
Yeah.
Like he's only ever been a position coach. So, okay. I will agree to put Deshaun at 18. No offense, Deshaun. Go out there and lead those Bruins to victory.
Yeah, we got nothing against you. This is more so from a, like, we don't know. That's why.
Hey, prove us wrong.
Yeah.
Bulletin board material.
God, he's in the UCLA. Guys, the boys at Big Banter said that I am a terrible football coach, and they're going to be like, who?
Okay. 17.
PJ Fleck.
Oh, you said 15 before. I thought you were going to fight me on this.
Oh, yeah, because I don't know how many teams are in the Big Ten because I'm a loser.
It's PJ Fleck. It's PJ Fleck. No, I have.
He's only made the program worse. Kind of.
He has. Well, they had the flash in the pan year where they won 10 games. They upset Penn State. I remember watching that game and it was electric. What was their quarterback's name again? The bald guy? He literally just stopped playing.
Morgan.
Like last year.
Tanner Morgan.
Tanner Morgan just like lit up the place. PJ Fleck is at 17. I wouldn't trust that man to coach my football program. I wouldn't trust him to row a boat. That's for sure.
How they've won,
which is unfortunate.
How they've won like six straight bowl games in his 10. Like that's the whole reason that he's there, because that's their standard at Minnesota. It's like, can you win a bowl game? Sure, you can stay. Which is kind of sad.
Yeah. I'm not a big PJ Fleck fan right now. I was a believer a couple years ago, and it's gone downhill. Okay. 16. I'm looking at this list. Oh, I have it.
I think I know where you're going to.
Who is it?
Walters, Purdue.
I wasn't going to go Walters. I thought about Walters. He's in this group. I was going to go Mike Loxley.
Oh, you're right. What a bum.
Am I Am I right? Okay. Am I right?
We can get stats or we can get down to the facts here. We should have known something was up when he refused to take the mayo bath without the big hat. He should have been fired right then and there. It's like you're gonna ask these young men to lay their lives out on the field and you won't get dumped with a little bit of mayo. You're soft. You're soft. Get out of here. Get out of my office, Mike Locksley. But I mean, every year it's like, oh, Maryland's gonna turn the corner, and then guess what? They don't. Wow.
Yeah, and it's not even like I don't need Maryland to win 10 or 11 games. But I need them to at least at some point
win a big game.
Win a big game. Like one. Right? Upset Penn State, upset Michigan, or upset Ohio State. Do one of the three. Any of the three you can pick, and they never do.
And they start every year like 5-0, and then they're barely bowl eligible by the end of the year.
They literally started last year. I think they started 5-0, and then they needed like they really needed to like squeeze their cheeks together and squeeze out a win to get into a bowl game at the end of last season. Mm. It's okay. We got Mike Locksley at 16. I'm thinking 15. I think we go with the name you gave, Ryan Walters.
Yeah. He's trending upward though. And that's because of my soft spot for Purdue. But galvanized isn't the correct term for it. They played a lot better at the end of the year. And it started with like the fourth quarter of that Michigan game too. I mean, the game was lost, but like, I mean, they're still playing hard, and then they ended up scoring too, which was a big deal at the second half of the year for the Michigan football team. But they were physical, they played fast, and they began to take on some of the identity of Walter's defenses at Illinois. As well. So I think that's what they're looking for. And that's what you need for Purdue. You need someone to establish a culture and then drive with it. Because like, you're not going to get guys to stay if that doesn't happen. Like with what's his face that just went to Louisville, right? The second that Purdue got good, he got the heck out of there. Walters doesn't seem like that type of guy that would take this Purdue coaching job as a coordinator in a Big Ten school and then get up and leave as soon as they're super successful. I think there's a chance that he might stay, or, you know, at least Purdue hovers at that Maryland or maybe above Maryland level with him at the helm.
I'm thinking for 14, I'm going back and forth between two names. I'm going back and forth between Kurt Cignetti or David Braun. I'm leaning
Cignetti. Just put Purdue and Indiana together.
I freaking love it. I love it. I also was leaning toward Cignetti going below Braun, just because even though Kurt had an incredible season at JMU, it was at JMU, and Braun had just a miraculous recovery of a season at Northwestern. Like, reassembling a football program that was in shambles literally 2 months before the season and lost a majority, if not all, of their NFL talent from the season before, and it's not a program that's ripe with NFL talent to begin with, and do what he did there was incredibly impressive. So I'm going to put Cignetti at 14, and then are you in agreement with Braun at 13, right above him?
I would agree, and maybe depending on some of these other guys on this list, maybe pushing Braun up a little bit higher, because he did that with zero time. Like, what
he literally did.
What can he do with a full offseason? Cignetti, like, yes, he had a lot of success at JMU. Now you're asking him to go to Indiana, which has never been a football school ever. And you're gonna try to turn that ship around. Like, good luck, buddy. But you can't really fault him because he hasn't been there and he hasn't done anything at Indiana. So, like, will that style translate? These two should be close together, because will JMU's style translate well into the Big Ten? And then Braun, with zero time, his style did translate to competitive Big Ten football. So you got to give him the credit there. And I'm excited. You know what? Maybe Northwestern's going to be a dark horse.
That's what they need to be. That's what they are when they're at their best. Okay. After Braun, who do we have next?
Would Jed Fish be appropriate here? I'm just trying to think. No, maybe not.
Sorry, what was that?
Would Jed Fish be appropriate here? No, that's too
low. No, he had Arizona. He had Arizona ranked last year, man.
That's too low.
Okay, let me list off a couple of other names. So okay, Deshaun, Walters, Braun. We got Brett Bielema. We got Greg Schiano.
Oh, freaking put Brett Bielema here. I can't stand that guy. He should be lower. But for the sake of... he's there. He is at this level of hireability because he had success in the Big Ten, so you have to give him a little bit of credit there. But that Illinois team, they're going nowhere. They're not. And I think this is his last chance to show that he can still coach.
Even after 2 years ago?
Dude, that was their shot, and they fumbled the bat. They had Michigan beat. And they could have wrapped up a Big Ten, you know, they could have wrapped up a Big Ten championship game appearance. And they fumbled the bag, and they allowed a 7-4 Purdue team go instead. That can't happen. And they had the most talent that they've had in the Brett Bielema era, and I don't think they got any better. So I'm putting him there.
Okay, I won't disagree with you. I think there's a pretty clear name for spot 11 then, and I think it's Greg Schiano. I know you're Mr. Rutgers. I don't know if you want him in the top 10 or not.
The only place that Greg Schiano was ever successful as a head coach was Rutgers. And what he's done, he's established an identity. Okay, and what happens when you establish an identity? You can go places. Rutgers is a run first, run hard football team. And in the Big Ten, you can be successful when you do that. And now they have a quarterback who knows what a forward pass is. So you have a little bit of options there.
Who knows what a forward pass is?
Ethan Kilimanjaro. He's the quarterback at Rutgers now. We talked about this.
Shut up.
We talked about this, Alex.
I do not remember talking about this.
Yeah, breaking news from Big Banter from literally 4 months ago. Ethan Kallick McManus is at Rutgers.
What?
And they still have Kyle Manungai. Dude, they're going to be good. I don't care.
I mean, I don't think they're going to be good.
Okay, but... well, you can shut up once. You and Ethan, idiots.
You
guys,
dummy.
You guys.
Oh, yeah. Ethan's not here, guys. Ethan's not here.
They couldn't tell.
He's actually just been quiet the whole episode. Okay. We've got Schiano at 11. I also have a very clear name I want to go next, but I want to hear what you have to say.
No, I've been talking too much. You go. And I will.
You have been talking too much. I was thinking that the whole time. I think Kirk Ferentz.
He's just
now. Okay, I know people are going to say, and Iowa fans always say this, like the Big Ten title game appearances, the constant domination of the West. I will counter that by repeating the last word there, West. It has literally been one of the worst divisions in all of college football. And the guy knows how to coach defense. The guy knows how to coach elite special teams. But I just don't know if he's adaptable in this modern era of college football. And you can see it when he does make it to the Big Ten championship games and his teams just whoever he plays wipes the floor with him. So I would put Ferentz at 10 below guys like Jed Fish, Matt Rhule, Luke Fickell, that group.
I would agree, but I want to make one comment. And I was thinking about this when I was watching that Nebraska game over Thanksgiving, which was an electric factory of horrid football. Kirk Ferentz and the Iowa Hawkeyes had a stranglehold on Big Ten West football. And it was like it was the mental side. Like Iowa was to the Big Ten West teams that Ohio State was to the Big Ten for a long time. Like, it was like, oh, we got to play Iowa. Like, it's like, Iowa goes in there, their offense would get you maybe 2 points a game. And you're like, we can't beat these guys. It was a full mental thing. That has to go at least a little bit of the credit with coaching. So the flip side of that coin, Big Ten West doesn't exist anymore. So are you going to have that stranglehold? No.
Right, exactly. Okay, I'm struggling a little bit with who goes next on this list. I listed off a few guys who I think are in this next group. We've got Jed Fish, Matt Rhule, Luke Fickell. I mean, you could also throw guys in here. You could throw Sharon Moore in here, who has not been a full-time head coach yet. Jonathan Smith has done it at Oregon State. He pulled off a good year last year, but hasn't done it over an extended period of time. Matt Rhule's proved it at multiple places. Jed Fish proved it at Arizona. So there's a few ways we could go with this here.
I want to go Jed Fish here because it was at Arizona. They weren't a traditional football school. We all said that, but now you got to go play Big Ten football and you have to do it at Washington. So that's a steep learning curve, I think, because Arizona was not the Oregon / Washington type. They were probably more closer to the USC UCLA, and I think that's going to be a little bit of a struggle for them. It's going to be a learning curve.
I'm struggling putting Jed Fish below Luke Fickell and even Sharon Moore a little bit, just because I love Sharon Moore. I think it was a great hire for Michigan. I think it was the right hire, but we just haven't seen it yet.
Sure.
Right? Like he's a bit of a wild card. His in-game management when he coached against Penn State and Ohio State was impeccable. Like, I think it was close to perfect.
Yeah.
We just haven't seen him. Like, Jed Fish has accomplished more as a head coach than Sharon Moore.
Okay.
And so has Luke Fickell. I think
I'm going to put Sharon
Moore here.
I'd be fine.
I think
with that.
I do.
I was going to be biased, and then I was going to put Jonathan Smith just behind Sharon Moore because I like chaos. But no, I'm cool with that. I will say, but for Sharon, yes, he hasn't had that coaching, like the full experience. But those three games, he had to do three different jobs on the sideline, right? I mean, head coach is a little bit different in game days. You know, he has to make the final. He was still calling plays, which is what he did as a coordinator. And then
yeah.
he was the offensive line coach as well during those games. And then he was the head coach. So he did, yes, he got help throughout the week, but on game days, he did three jobs by himself. And I think in three of the biggest games of probably the season for the majority of the conference and then maybe for some of the majority of the teams in the country. So, yeah, I'm cool with that. Let's see what he can do with a full week game plan and everything else. So that's number nine.
That's number nine. So who's number eight?
Jed Fish. For the reasons that I said. Because I'm right.
Okay.
And smarter than you. And more handsome.
I would agree with all of those things.
No, that's not true. I was lying.
okay. Sharon at nine, Jed Fish at eight. We are in Matt Rhule, Luke Fickell, Jonathan Smith territory.
Jonathan Smith, put him right here.
I think Jonathan Smith, yeah.
I think
Jonathan Smith.
Because he's so solid, like, it's good because, like, he's a good football coach. Like, it's like, yeah, he knows how to coach football. But are you, like, excited, I guess? Like, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah, true. Honestly, I'll be really honest here. I'm struggling with the fact that we haven't written Luke Fickell's name down yet.
I would go right here.
I'm not going to lie. I know he'll go right here at six for us, but I'm not going to lie. I was very disappointed with his first year at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Very disappointed.
He was trying to change their identity a little bit, though. And he was trying to change it when he needed to, like, morph it. Because the dairy raid wasn't going to fly. Because Wisconsin was built on farm boys and farm boys only. You know, not this fancy schmancy West Coast air raid offense. Get that the heck out of here. This is
like,
Madison.
I struggle because he did coach in a college football playoff, but it was at a group of five school. But he did go undefeated. And then he had a rough first year at Wisconsin, but it was just year one. So I just have conflicting feelings because I was so optimistic. And I'm still optimistic, but I we'll leave him at six. So we got Jed Fish, Jonathan Smith, Luke Fickell. We are now in our top five. And the five coaches that are left,
Lincoln Riley,
are Ryan Day.
Because I can't trust him further than I can throw him.
Well, hold on. You might want to pause. We've got Ryan Day, Lincoln Riley, Dan Lanning, James Franklin, and Matt Rhule.
Oh, man. Frick. This sucks. I hate this. Can I put Jim Harbaugh here?
Jim Harbaugh would not be at five. No, come on.
He'd be at number one. Yeah, it's just who we can put at number one. Ugh. Matt Rhule?
It's either Matt Rhule. Do we have a clear top two in Ryan Day and Dan Lanning?
Yeah, probably.
I would agree.
Probably.
Lincoln Riley, James Franklin, and Matt Rhule.
I don't want to rank James Franklin above Lincoln Riley, and I don't want to rank Lincoln Riley above James Franklin. The duality of man.
Can we this is our ranking. We can rank them whatever we want.
I know, but I don't want to. Like, they don't deserve it. Like,
what if we made them tie?
I guess,
like, we had Ryan Day and Dan Lanning, one and two, or whatever we decide at that point.
Okay.
Lincoln Riley and James Franklin tied for three.
Oh, it's tied for four.
Technically, yeah. Yeah, and then Matt Rhule at five.
Yeah, Matt Rhule at five. Matt Rhule at five because he's literally been a winner wherever he's gone except the NFL, which is fine because you can come back to the college ranks and be good. They will be good. They will figure it out. He figured it out at Baylor, of all places.
Matt Rhule could be the fastest riser on this list.
Yeah.
Like, I could legitimately see us after the next 2 years being like, oh, Matt Rhule is very clearly the third coach, best coach of the Big Ten.
Correct. And then James.
Okay, so he's at five.
And then James Franklin and Lincoln Riley are just two coaches that everyone is pissed off at all the time because they should do things good, but they don't know how to do things the goodest because they're incapable of it. Because they keep tripping over themselves. It's like, oh, hey, you have a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, and you're playing in the Pac-12 championship, which is probably the weakest of the Power Five, and you got to go play a team that you lost to once. So odds are you're probably not going to lose to them again. So yeah, here's your college football playoff appearance. No, can't do that. Sorry, we're going to get blitzed by 30. Oh, hey, you got to go to the Big Ten now, and you got to play Rutgers in December, and your offense couldn't stop a nosebleed, and you're three-ply paper towel.
I can't wait to watch Lincoln Riley. I don't even care about the team. I want to see Lincoln Riley in the snow, just him as a human being. I want to see him in the snow.
I need USC and Lincoln Riley and Puscatani or wherever Rutgers is.
Puscatani.
I need them in Iowa in December. Oh, at Kinnick at a night game. Dude, they're going to poop their pants. Lincoln Riley's just going to be like, it's cold. And then Kirk Ferentz is just going to be on the other side. It's like, you haven't seen special teams like this in your entire life, young blood. they're gonna pull out a Cooper DeJean 2.0, some 5'10" white kid from the middle of Idaho, and he's just going to be an absolute dog.
Cold Lincoln Riley is going to be like my favorite meme of all time. And you know he's going to be shivering with some red cheeks on the sideline.
Oh, my gosh. And then James Franklin, in every big game, has at least three play calls. It's like, why did you do that? Literally every college football fan in America that's watching that game in unison will say, why did you do that, James Franklin? And you're going to hear it. You're going to hear it at one point. It's going to be in unison. It's going to be so loud. It's going to – everybody knows except for whatever reason, James Franklin, and we can't figure it out.
He is an enigma. I will give him the credit of he's played in maybe the opposite of Kirk Ferentz. He's played in maybe the toughest division in college football. And Penn State is part of the reason why it probably is the toughest division in college football. But similar to what we said about Loxley in Maryland, the fact that you haven't gotten over the hump more than the one time, which, let's be honest, even though you did win a Big Ten championship that year, the CFP committee still didn't deem you good enough to make the playoff because you stumbled one too many times on your way to that championship. I believe they were a two-loss Big Ten champ that year. They just happened to, they lost the right games and won the right games. Yeah. So the math worked out. The math mathed.
And I guess in the tied for four slot, James Franklin can be above Lincoln Riley because they always win the games they need to win. You never hear of Penn State losing a game that they shouldn't. And we talk about that. And like, so, yeah, I don't know.
So I'll put James Franklin at 3.5.
No, he's still still tied for four. Just put him above.
How can they be tied, but one of them be above the other?
Because that's how it works. It's tied for fourth, this team. Tied for fourth, that team.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, I'm going to go T4, T4, but James Franklin is listed as the first T4.
Correct. There we go. Now we're on the same page. You said that this had to be in unison.
I'm using my brainwaves. Okay, last two. Ryan Day and Dan Lanning. Ryan Day has had multiple CFP appearances. He's had, I believe, one appearance in a national championship game, which was during the COVID year. I mean, his record in the Big Ten is absolutely insane. He's got a reputation for not getting over the hump, aka Michigan, in recent years. So I feel like the national narrative around him is that Ohio State has gone downwards. But let's be honest, from what they were, there wasn't really how much higher up could you go with what Urban Meyer made them. So how much do you hold that against him? How much do you give him credit for not maintaining, but getting close to maintaining that level of success? And then Dan Lanning seems like just one of the hottest coaches in the country. Mm-hmm. Like he's on the rise, Georgia product, really building something special at Oregon. Feels like he could be a darling of college football very soon. It could potentially bring Oregon their first ever national championship in the game. So who would you put at 2 and who would you put at 1? And we will see if we need to debate.
I think if we are being unbiased, it has to be Dan Lanning at 2 and third base at number 1. I think it has to.
I think I would disagree.
You're wrong. Alex, you're wrong. Todd. No, you're wrong. Okay, and here's why. Okay, Ryan Day, despite being born on third base or not being born on third base, however you see it, like he has out currently right now the most college football playoff appearances in the Big Ten and the most college football playoff appearances, I think, out of all these coaches, even the ones that are entering, made it to a national championship game, something that Lincoln Riley and Dan Lanning haven't done. And yes, he hasn't beaten Michigan as of recently, but has been able to put his team in positions to win those games. Dan Lanning, okay, is a hot name. He's rising up the ranks, but he had a great opportunity to get into the college football playoff this year and beat a team that they lost to once on the road, and at a neutral site, they got blitzed. And they had a lead in that game, too. I believe they had a double-digit lead, and then Washington just came storming back. So if we're going to fault Ryan Day for his slip-ups against Michigan, not being able to get over the hump, we have to fault Dan Lanning in the small sample size that we have. And then we have to give credit to the success that Ryan Day has had, because Dan Lanning doesn't have any of that success that he currently holds right now. Yes, he walked into a better situation. It was Ohio State, but there still is a level that you have to maintain, because as we saw with Michigan basketball with John Beilein, like, Juwan Howard brought that program down in steps. Okay, Ryan Day has still kept the Ohio State Buckeyes at an elite, elite level. Dan Lanning is still a question mark to an extent.
Okay. I think you persuaded me. I also just pulled up.
Yeah, because you're Oregon. Because you're dumb. I'm just kidding. You're not dumb.
No, I'm not dumb. You're just smart, and I'm open-minded. I pulled up a list of Oregon season results. Mario Cristobal went 10-4 before Dan Lanning got there. He's gone 10-3 and 12-2. Ryan Day, Urban Meyer was 13-1 the year before. Ryan Day has not gone a season losing more than two games at Ohio State.
Right.
He's been 13-1, 7-1 COVID year, made it to the national championship game. 11-2, 11-2, 11-2. And, you know, that second loss this year, right, it was Missouri when they basically didn't have half their team. Not that it didn't matter, but not that the game didn't matter is what I'm saying, but, like, you have to factor that in. So, okay. Ryan Day is at one, and Dan Lanning is at two. So, our official Big Banter Big Ten football head coaching power rankings. At 18, we have Deshaun Foster. 17, PJ Fleck. 16, Mike Locksley. 15, Ryan Walters. 14, Kirk Cignetti. 13, David Braun. 12, Brett Bielema. 11, Greg Schiano. 10, Kirk Ferentz. 9, Sherrone Moore. 8, Jed Fish. 7, Jonathan Smith. 6, Luke Fickell. 5, Matt Rhule. Tied for 4th, Lincoln Riley. Tied for 4th above Lincoln Riley, James Franklin. 2 is Dan Lanning. And 1 is Ryan Day.
Yeah. Those guys are in the doghouse immediately, as they should be.
Who's in the doghouse?
Mr. No Defense and Mr. What on Earth Are You Doing? Why are you calling a 3rd-and-8 draw?
Because they'll never see it coming. That's the kind of play I used to call on NCAA 14.
Oh, no.
We're gonna have to run this list by Ethan next week, yeah, if he's able to record, if his family's healthy and he can make some time for us in his busy schedule. You got anything before we send the people off?
I got nothing, but if you have grudges this college football season, hold them. It makes it more entertaining.
I think that's the greatest advice I've ever heard in my life. Thank you all for listening. Like, subscribe, follow us on the socials. You can listen back to the top of the episode for our handles, and we will talk to you, if not next week, very soon. Peace out.